This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, and welcome to this ILTA Radio podcast. My name is Jack Racinto of Vetter Price, and I am a member of the Technology Solutions Content Coordinating Team for ILTA. Today's podcast is the first in a series called Why Are We Still Talking About Two-Factor? Do it! Discussing this with me today is Patrick Wirtz from Microsoft. Patrick joined Microsoft a few years ago after spending 15 years in the IT department of a local construction company by the name of the Walsh Group. His focus at Microsoft is in the identity and security space, but goes beyond having been involved in many end-user experience projects while at Walsh. Patrick, welcome and thank you so much for joining us today to talk about two-factor authentication, or for brevity's sake, 2FA.
Great to be here today.
From Microsoft's perspective, when should an organization implement 2FA?
If you think about what end-user impact comes in from an MFA, that's sort of always the first knee-jerk reaction is, you know, when do I do it? And I always think of it as ideally when there's not an event. I mean, we don't want to do it post-breach, right? So if we're thinking about this in a proactive sense, we want to get that end user onboarded day one, the moment they hit the organization. You know, there are so many different scenarios coming into play as they onboard from an HR perspective and whatnot. Let's make sure we get them enrolled in MFA as well during that first instance. And even if we want to take that a step further and say an organization is putting MFA in for across the organization, let's try and do it when we can basically pile on all of the impacts at once. So say that we're rolling out self-service password reset, or we're moving an end user to the cloud or something of the like. We want to make that as part of the process, because the more times we bug the end user, more likely to get kind of an IT person that we're doing that all at once versus
right. We're all used to having our users get angry with us over other issues. Why compile that with an extra layer when we can avoid it?
Yep, very much agreed.
So what issues have potential clients suggested that implementing Azure MFA in your case would cause? And how have you overcome these concerns?
You know, really, I think of it from this perspective that, you know, the reality is we're just going to cause some pain and suffering there. I mean, it's sort of the nature of the beast. But that being said, there are certainly ways to kind of overcome that. I mean, any organization initially is going to say, no, we're not rolling it out. Because we're just not going to cause that pain. We don't want to have all those help desk tickets. So as Microsoft has kind of gone down this path with our customers, we've looked at it from kind of a couple different angles. So very simply, we could look at it from kind of seeding the information into the system. So, you know, populating that phone number that you might want to use as a text message MFA prompt in the system would be kind of an example of that. That being said, that authenticator app is really going to be your best bet. If you look at like some of the NIST standards out there and with SIM jacking and whatnot, we'll definitely focus on the authenticator app. But just kind of an example of how do we kind of maybe onboard, because some MFA is better than no MFA. You don't have to be the fastest guy, just the faster guy than the other guy when you outrun the bear. So think of it in that context, right? But really, yeah. You know, that's the general pushback is end user impact and experience. And so if we take that a step further, it really, I mean, MFA is the goal of MFA is to not MFA. Your goal should be to MFA only when there's an event. So if we think about the Microsoft ecosystem, we try and think of it more in a definitions-based approach. Something I have, something I know. So that something I have might be a PIN or a device or something of the like. It doesn't have to be MFA in the traditional sense. So that onboarding process might be a little bit difficult initially, but if we can curate the end user experience and say that that's a trusted device that the company owns and we've attested to the health of it, why can't that be part of the MFA experience versus a traditional sort of what everybody thinks about, hey, I got a text message or I got a push notification. Let's think about this more holistically in that definitions-based approach so that we don't get pushback from the end user and they get a great experience while at the same time we're getting the right level of security within the organization.
That's an interesting approach, looking at it in that kind of holistic sense where you are looking to to expand the user experience and negate some of that impact that MFA actually has on people without actually cutting back on any security to get it implemented.
Right. It's. I mean, think about it in the context of I log into my machine with maybe a PIN. That's MFA. I mean, if you think about it from your ATM is MFA. You've got a PIN, you've got your debit card when I take out money. How is it any different than putting a PIN, logging into a device that's already trusted? You know, and then all of a sudden we're not MFAing again. We're not MFAing into the application since we've already done it into the device. Why do we need to have that multiple MFA challenges? What value does that add? And quite honestly, you get into fatigue from an end user. Now all of a sudden they start hitting approve for every MFA challenge coming in, so that if an attacker is coming after that account, we don't even know if they actually were able to be blocked because the user's just hitting approve without regard to actually any concern there.
That's a perfect segue into the next question I have for you, actually. 2FA used to be used for remote access, and now it's being used in the office. What concerns with an in-office 2FA scenario have you seen or heard? You know, sometimes people say that it's a burden, as you said, to have to enter a two-sign-in option at every initial login every time you unlock your PC. What can we do with regard to 2FA to have it implemented at an initial login, but not have to unlock it every time there's a logged-in PC?
Yeah, I think that if I'll make a shameless plug here for some of the experiences that Microsoft has really been investing in, and that's things like Windows Hello. And so Windows Hello is that multi-factor authentication into Windows itself. I'm logging in with something I have and something I know. So that something I have might be my face. It might also just be a PIN code. Both would apply to Windows Hello. And so what we're trying to do there is protect the identity of the person. We don't really care about whether you're in the office, whether you're on vacation. Hopefully you're not checking email too much while you're on vacation, but that's beside the point. We're really looking to kind of protect the identity of the user. We treat it as a zero trust network approach. So your place of existence is sort of irrelevant. We all need to be productive wherever we are. We all need to secure that experience as well. So really when we think about the office versus your home, it's sort of irrelevant. We just want to make sure that that user experience is protected. And I would even take that a step further is that what we're trying to do is look beyond just a definition-based approach of MFA. You know, that I'm on a device, that I'm in a location, and we're trying to actually understand the user's behavior. So if I'm logging in Tokyo and 2 seconds later I log in London, well, that's impossible travel. How do we take this massive amount of information that we've seen from all of our different end users across all of our different segments and turn that into a machine learning model so that every night when I log in to my home computer, well, do I really need to be multi-factored there? No, that's a trusted location. The system has actually seen me log in there for multiple times. Over time, we'll understand that context of what that user's behavior is and not impact the end user experience, but still maintain the security perimeter around that identity.
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it as well, and you're kind of expanding on where we're moving forward with MFA. So with regards to Microsoft in general, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but with a little more of a broader view, where do you see Azure MFA going?
End of the day, passwords are a necessary evil in today's world. It's something that we all kind of probably use the same password, or at least a combination of the same password across many different services. So you probably begin with a capital letter, you end with a bang, and somewhere in between you've got a couple lowercase, maybe throw in a number or two. It's fairly easy to guess what that password might be, a little bit of social engineering. So what Microsoft is really working towards is a passwordless authentication model, working in conjunction with standards-based FIDO compliant scenarios so that we don't even have this awkward password scenario. So if you look at, for instance, go and look at your Hotmail or Outlook.com account or Xbox account, you can enable this from a consumer perspective by yourselves where you'll actually get a prompt. You'll try and log into the service with your email address or whatever it might be. And on the Microsoft Authenticator app, you'll get an experience where a number will pop up. That number would be matched to the screen. So if there are three sets of numbers on the screen, you pick the one that actually matches it on your TV, and all of a sudden you get a prompt for a PIN on your device. So In my case, mine's actually tied to my facial recognition on my phone, and I logged in. At no point in time did I have to put in a password to be able to log into that whole system. The beauty of that is not only A, do I not have to remember that password, but B, I don't actually have to worry about changing that or something of the like. There's nobody who can basically look over my shoulder as I'm typing in my password and be able to capture that and start using my services. So Microsoft's focus here is really more of a passwordless authentication in the standards-based scenario through the FIDO Alliance that we have.
That's pretty fascinating, actually, using some of the other devices that you have on hand to kind of accomplish that MFA without using a password. It's really great to learn more about how Microsoft is addressing these issues with Azure MFA. And I think that it's really exciting with how you all are moving forward with that. Patrick, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to speak with us on 2FA and in particular Azure MFA.
Definitely great to be here, Jack. More than appreciated to have the invite.
And thank you to our listeners who've joined us today on this episode of ILTA Radio. Why are we still talking about two-factor? Do it.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.